When you're experiencing a mental health problem, supportive and reliable information can change your life. That's what Mind do. They empower people to understand their condition and the choices available to them. We're joined today by Stephen Buckley, who manages Mind's Infoline and is Mind's expert spokesperson on mental health problems and their treatments. Every year, one in four of us will experience a mental health problem, but hundreds of thousands of people are still struggling, and Mind believe no one should have to face a mental health problem alone. They'll listen, give you support and advice, and fight your corner. At this time of year, when we hopefully get together with friends and families and celebrate the festive season, it's important to remember that so many people are often fighting battles we don't see and maybe know nothing about. So let's look after each other, share a cuppa perhaps, and realise you're not alone. I'm Andy. Welcome along to Tea with the Changemakers. Stephen, thanks for joining us in the pod today. For those who don't know, tell us about Mind and what the organisation does.
Mind's a mental health charity, and we work across England and Wales, and we're here for everyone who's affected by a mental health problem. One of the things we do is provide trusted information on mental health, including information about causes, symptoms and treatments, and how people can go about getting support for those problems. We also campaign and lobby for change to improve what treatment is available for people with mental health problems, and to improve, you know, I guess the broader legislation that impacts people with mental health problems. And we also campaign to change social attitudes and aid understanding of mental health in the general population. We've also got around 120 or so physical minds in various communities around England and Wales. What they do varies from place to place, but they might cover things like talking therapies. They might offer some peer support or some befriending. They might offer some benefits advocacy and help with employment. And you can find out much more about what local minds do are at mind.org.uk.
Well done getting the website in there nice and early, because that's exactly where I wanted to go next, was looking at your current campaigns on your website. You talk about fighting for mental health, and I found that a really emotive term. I'm presuming, working in marketing as we do, that was a very intentional move on your part.
Yeah, it was. We refreshed our brand, I think it's probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, and that phrase, fighting for mental health, came out of that. You know, what we wanted to do was kind of capitalize, I guess, on the shift in understanding there's been about mental health problems over the last 10 or 15 years, and really sort of take the moment as presented and really, really push hard for the needs of people with mental health problems. You know, we recognize that there's been a significant amount of change over that sort of 10, 15 year period, but we also recognize there was still a lot more to do. There's still far too many people with mental health problems don't get the support and treatment that they need and they deserve. There are still people who experience stigma and discrimination as a result of their mental health problem. There's a huge amount of work still to do. So what we wanted to try and get across by using that phrase was that we are here to sort of, you know, be activists. We're not kind of passive in this space, that actually we want to get out there, we want to make a noise, and we want to be alongside people with mental health problems fighting for what they need.
Mind as a charity is certainly one that I've known through most of my adult life as being around, and, you know, having a vague idea at least of what you do. So this change, are we past being, you know, passively raising, you know, I'm not sure how you passively raise awareness, but this is there a change in tactics now from just raising awareness to really having to do something?
That's a really interesting question, and it's one we wrestle with. Yeah, I think that different people are at different places on a journey is kind of our assessment. And, you know, organisations like Mind, campaigns like Time to Change, you know, the many tens of thousands of independent mental health campaigners and supporters and grassroots organisation have all played a role over the last 10, 15, 20 years in increasing understanding of poor mental health, and of getting it more into kind of onto a political agenda, of getting it aired more as an issue in the media, of getting kind of as a sports people and celebrities talk about their experience of poor mental health. Yeah, there's been a huge number of people involved in that broad change. But I think for me, it comes back to that the point about there are still far, far, far too many people with mental health problems who don't get the treatment and the support that they need.
And as you've alluded to there, you've sort of changed who you're targeting. You're moving into the political sphere. You're moving into the influencers sphere, where you're getting famous faces and sports people, getting them involved to talk about their own struggles with mental health. Is this part of the thing? You're targeting these people because you've always been available for everyone, but is it a matter of making people realize that they are part of the everyone, that everyone can have a mental health issue?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. Mental health is part of everyone's life experience. I think sometimes maybe we can overdo the comparisons with physical health, but there are some sort of broad comparisons we can draw. It is a part of everyone's life, and celebrities, sports people, politicians are no different from anyone else in that regard. And I think it's really interesting. I think you used the phrase "our mind targeting celebrity people," and I'm not sure that we are. In some ways, what we have found is celebrities want to approach us to talk about their experience, because they recognise that them sharing their story can have a huge impact on people who might still be a little bit uncertain about reaching out for help, or who are perhaps facing challenges and discrimination in their own lives. And actually hearing a public figure talk about the mental health, it helps normalize it. And we see that in some of the services that Mind run, that when things like, in some ways it sounds trivial, but I don't think we should underestimate it at all. When a program such as EastEnders or Coronation Street covers a mental health topic in a way that is realistic and sensitive, the impact that that has on people's help-seeking behavior is phenomenal.
You have Stephen Fry as one of your ambassadors, and one of the videos he features in talks about the British sensibility. Our default position is embarrassment, and we hide all these things, and we don't want to go out and talk. So getting these things out via soaps and on TV and into social media, it just makes it all the more accessible for people, and, as you say, normalizes this discussion.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think there is that our president's video alludes to there, that I guess sometimes it gets called the British stiff upper lip, doesn't it? I think that there's perhaps, and I don't want to overgeneralize too much here, but perhaps that tendency is even more pronounced in men, who perhaps find it a little bit harder than women in general to talk about feelings or emotions, or to acknowledge that they're feeling stressed or pressured. And I think one of the things that we found during the COVID pandemic, which was very symptomatic, I guess, of what Stephen Fry talks about, is that we found a lot of people, when we surveyed them during the pandemic, acknowledging that their mental health was under pressure in a way that it had never been before, that they were feeling more depressed, they were feeling more anxious, they were feeling less hopeful about the future. They were experiencing some pretty difficult things. But when we asked them, had they, tried to make an appointment with a GP, or had they reached out for any other help, one of the answers that came back was no, they hadn't, because they didn't want to be a trouble to anyone, or they didn't want to burden already overstretched services.
But that brings me nicely onto the next question I wanted to ask about the coronavirus pandemic. In a strange way, has that made things both simultaneously better and worse regarding mental health? Obviously, we all had a horrendous time throughout that, but has there been some good come from that collective memory of how bad things were, and realizing that we don't want to go back to that kind of feeling, we don't want to be like that again, so we need to find ways of dealing with our emotions?
I'm not sure is the short answer to that one. I think that there are a few things that I took away from the pandemic. one of which was I was surprised at how willing people were to center mental health in the overall discussion around COVID. It seemed that, you know, the discussion about how people were feeling, particularly I think younger people and children, and the impact that on people's mental health as a result of COVID and lockdown was very high in the national conversation, you know, alongside things like loneliness or things like economic impact and things like access to healthcare services. So it was perhaps a little bit surprising initially to find that mental health was prioritized in that national conversation. And we did see quite a large increase in the number of people reaching out to Mind during that time, specifically to talk about the impact of COVID on their mental health. And I think that was borne out as well by a lot of the research that the Office for National Statistics did during COVID that found a general worsening in the mental health of the population during lockdown. You know, it was positive that mental health was part of that national conversation, but I don't think we can underestimate the impact that the pandemic had on people's mental health, and we're not through that by any means.
Well, no, the phrase that, yeah, I think we're all sick of hearing now is cost of living crisis. And obviously last month we had the news that Collins Dictionary declared permacrisis their word of the year. Yeah, and that kind of terminology, that neologism, that can't be good for the collective health of the country.
It has felt like one thing after another, doesn't it?
It
kind of feels like we're living through two or three once in a generation events in a 2 or 3 year period. You know, we had the COVID, the pandemic. We've got, you know, war at the edge of Europe. We've got huge pressures on families' finances. You know, it does feel like a lot to deal with, and it's followed quite close on each other. People haven't necessarily had that opportunity to decompress, recharge their batteries, take stock of where things are before another thing has come along. And certainly the cost of living crisis has really put into focus some of the material challenges that lots and lots of people are facing. We know that it's people who live in the most deprived areas of the UK more than twice as likely to die from suicide than those living in the wealthiest areas of the UK, for example. So we know that things like cost of living are going to probably disproportionately impact on people with mental health problems, or will have an increasing impact on the state of the nation's mental health. You know, it is a worrying situation. We do try and like be, you know, a voice of optimism where we can, and we do think we've got a role to play in giving people hope, but at the moment it kind of feels quite stretched, I've got to be honest.
Looking at some of the stats that you've got in your current campaign, that this isn't football, this is reality, talking about, you know, the emotional roller coaster that, you know, I for one, you know, it's 90 minutes of escape from, you know, as you say, all these things going on everywhere all the time, and you try and put your thoughts and feelings into something else for a while and try and get away from it all. But as you say, eventually that period of escapism comes to an end. And the numbers you've got there in this campaign where suicide, I mean, I've seen the statistics put out no end of times where it's the biggest killer in men between, you know, 35 and 55 or 25 and 45. But the stat on your website now, it's the biggest killer of men and boys aged 9 to 50. Like you say, you're talking about the effects on children's mental health. That must be really something difficult to come to terms with and to then try and help people with.
Yeah, it is challenging, I think you're right. It doesn't matter how often you hear that kind of statistical snapshot of suicide being the biggest killer of men in England and Wales. In certain age brackets, it doesn't matter how often you hear it, it still kind of shakes you, doesn't it?
Seeing it come down to, you know, pre-teen age, yeah, even into teenagers, you kind of get the idea of when we were all growing up, you know, hormones raging and, you know, trying to fit in socially, it's difficult. So you can kind of understand how, you know, kids in their teens can feel. But, you know, from the age of nine, like you say, there are so many exterior factors now putting pressure on the family unit that boys age nine are having to seek help outside of, you know, going to mum and dad, say. That's just incredible.
Yeah, it is incredibly difficult to hit here. And, you know, we know that for, you know, younger people, it's perhaps even harder than in the adult space to get access to services. I know that we hear far too often of waiting lists of, you know, 18 months, 2 years, maybe even longer to see a specialist for young people. And, you know, when people do get to see a specialist, or perhaps, you know, on occasions when they're taken into hospital for more significant treatment, it can often be a very, very long way away from where family are based. It can be, you know, it's a hugely pressured system at the minute with lots and lots of challenges in it. We're seeing, I think, some of the working through of COVID and the impact of things like schools being closed, and we're seeing the impact of things like not being able to see friends or family as often. You know, we did some snapshot research with younger people during the pandemic, and we found that a number were perhaps turning to more unhelpful coping mechanisms, things like recreational drugs or alcohol or other forms of self-harm, and some of the things that lockdown had taken away from young people seemed to impact them more greatly. So it was things like access to sports facilities, things like access to friends, things like access to education, and for a certain, you know, tranche of those young people as well, those coming up to sort of exam periods, I think we kind of felt that they felt it was taking away potentially some of their life chances and opportunities, and the things that they'd worked hard for. I think it was really interesting to see that Nightline, who's the support service for students across the UK, released some figures earlier in the week, and they're still sort of unpicking, I think, the impact of COVID on university age students. So I do think that the impact is wearing through, and it's incredibly tough for younger people.
But thankfully, trying to swing back, as you say, to a more optimistic light, there are organisations like Mind that are available. In some cases, yes, people will need to go and have very specialist help, but your info line, your legal line, and just what we're hearing from people, that it's okay to talk, and that it was an old BT ad, wasn't it? Wasn't it Bob Hoskins? It's good to talk.
Yes. Yes. We're showing our age now, but yes, I remember that one.
Absolutely. I was staggered looking through your report that it was last December that you launched your first TV ad, that you hadn't really had that media profile before then.
Yeah, we felt perhaps that the time was right. You know, perhaps building on where we'd come from during the pandemic and recognizing that you know, mental health had been part of the national conversation, we felt that the time was right for us to try a TV ad to raise a bit more awareness of the Mind name, what we do, and how people can get involved and support our work. You know, and alongside that, we also have done some work with ITV on their Britain Get Talking campaign. So we are getting out and about a bit more, if you like, in the media world, and trying to sort of grow awareness of the issues, the kinds of things that Mind want to help with and are fighting for, but also how individuals themselves can be involved and help take charge of the change that they want to see happen in services.
Brings me on nicely to the sort of stories that, again, you have one feature on your website, which is Bob's story, an older gentleman who, I think, you know, having, I believe it's a story where he's lost his wife, he's feeling very isolated, and he'd always been active, but he was in danger of being shut away, but then gets involved with the walking and talking, which seems to be something that's really spreading across the country. And again, you had your touch on football earlier, and I've seen that I go across to Liverpool quite regularly, and I've seen how fans there have set up groups for men to get together to walk and talk, their well-being walks around the city that just let people come together. And it doesn't have to be things as major as, you know, as we've seen throughout COVID, people losing loved ones, but even just, you know, work-related stress or problems with the family at home, just being able to come together with like-minded people, get out and get physical activity and feel good in that way, but also have the chat with people who are going through similar issues, if not exactly the same. And as you say, being able to vent to each other and just realize that we're never alone in all this.
Yeah, those kinds of activities are hugely important. And, you know, there's, you know, as you say, there's quite a number of those groups doing things like well-being walks or, I don't know, men in sheds and all those kinds of fantastic projects that do make a difference. You know, and it's absolutely true that you don't need to be an expert in mental health to have a conversation with someone about mental health.
We had a good chat with the Men's Shed organization earlier this year, and it was very much the talk of, you know, putting 20 men in a room to fix a lawnmower who may not know anything about the lawnmower, but I know how to make a cup of tea, I know how to make a biscuit, and I know how to bring up kids, and I've got a couple of grandkids, and just suddenly all the world's problems were being solved, and the lawnmower in the middle didn't really matter anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, obviously for people who have more significant mental health problems, having a chat with friends might not be the whole part of the answer. But, you know, some of the things that you just described there in that little kind of sketch, you've got people connecting with each other who they may or may not know each other, but they're connecting with each other over a shared interest. You know, these things are really important to help us sort of maintain our sense of personal well-being. So, you know, those kinds of projects are just fabulous at covering quite a lot of ground, but doing so in a way that just feels human and natural.
So as we're recording this, it's first day of Advent. We've opened the calendar here in the office. I didn't get to swipe the chocolate out of it, but there we go. That's unfortunate.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. So if you could have one present under your tree this Christmas, you know, for everyone's mental well-being, what would you look to receive?
I would love that for the people who need it most, there is a relief from any pressure or distress that they're facing at the minute.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it? Just yeah. Like you say, this perma crisis, if it could just, you know, if it could take 5 minutes, please, just give us all a break for Christmas. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it's plastic free, and it's recyclable.
Yep. Stephen, it's been great talking to you. Before I let you go, as I ask all my guests, how do you take your tea?
I take mine, no milk, no sugar. And at the minute, I've got a cup of tea with some kind of chai spices in it.
Any dunkables on the side there?
There might be a ginger biscuit very shortly.
Ah, you see, it's all festive, spices.
Yes.
This is good Christmassy stuff where, you know, let's hope we get that peace and quiet for Christmas, and that the new year is a much kinder one to us all than 2022 was.
Amen to that. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Thank you, Stephen. Great stuff. Thank you. And thank you for listening as well. We appreciate that we touched on some heavy stuff in that episode. And yeah, 2022 has been quite the year, hasn't it? A lot of people have been through a lot, let's put it that way. But as we've been delighted to showcase this year, there's a lot of people doing a lot of good things too. We've celebrated groundbreaking businesses, fantastic charities, and inspirational individuals, and we've been delighted to have you all along for the ride. And we're just getting started. We're looking forward to bringing you even more fantastic guests throughout 2023. On behalf of Kelly, producer Max, and the entire team here at Social Change, we wish you all the very best for the festive season. And after a couple of weeks off to recharge our batteries, we'll be back in the first week of January for more Tea with the Changemakers. My name's Andy, wishing you all the best. See you next year.